Fed can just print more money out of thin air, but the government's always going to be in debt to the Fed. Always.
Everybody has questions that aren't being answered.
And welcome to another Monday Night Master Debaters. We got the Martin Luther King Day special. You know, it's just, it wouldn't be MLK Day if we didn't have a Master Debaters. And ironically enough, listen, I'm in a small, small town. There's very little color in my town. But yet, out on the street corner of the one main intersection today, there were plenty of boomers out there with End Racism and Black Lives Matter sign. And unfortunately, they didn't recruit anyone from the melanated team to help their cause. But they were fighting the good fight, apparently, in their own head. So, hey, it is what it is. The world is starting to show us signs that it is normal. I mean, the Cowboys got smoked again in the first round last night, so they will stay true to form there. They'll never win another Super Bowl, hopefully. And, hey, it is what it is. We're here tonight, though. Back to Monday Night Master Debaters on regular. Last night, you got a little bonus episode with Drew, myself, and the two Ryans. And tonight, we have a new guest to the show, Mr. John Gusty. John, how's it going? The author of Red Pill Revolution.
Oh, man. Again, thank you for having me, man. We were talking before you started this thing. I'm just, you know, always up for having constructive conversation in a butthurt free zone. So let's do it.
Yes, there are no tears shed here. That's the thing. It's like, and that's the best part about this. Like, we've had people on, like I said, we've had people on that agree, disagree, and I love it. It's all about conversation. And the whole point of being an adult is being able to have a conversation, disagree with someone, and walk away at the end and have respect for one another. You know,
isn't that the essence of creativity and individuality?
Yes.
One of my pillars of conversation that I always try to, you know, anchor myself in is creativity and individuality is probably the biggest thing that's under attack, because when you're trying to control somebody, the last thing you need them being is creative or an individual. I mean, think of any abusive relationship you've ever seen. You know, we've all known guys that have been very abusive to their ladies, and you know, they're the ones that are checking their phones and won't let them go out by themselves. And you know, I mean, you can't allow for individuality or creativity if you're trying to control. And so, and just being able to have an opinion or be able to have creative thought or skeptical thinking, that is the essence of creativity. And we need the, you know, I don't know, you know, Beastie Boys fought for our right to party. We need to fight for our right to stay creative and individual. So
yeah, it's the fight against the machine, you know, and that's an uphill battle. But hey, Drew, my favorite ginger from down under, welcome, my friend. You're going to be the minority of the group today, okay?
That's okay. I'm always a minority.
All right, you're going to be the representative. Hold that flag for us.
Well, it's Martin Luther King Day. You definitely need an Australian for that, I assume.
Yes.
Surely.
And a redheaded Australian at that. Yes. we need that. How's it going down there, my man?
Very good, man. Very good. Weather is warming up, so it's not storming, not flooding. Hopefully, we're actually going to get a normal summer. But apart from that, still a bit of research. So happy to jump on these shows when I've got the time during school break and enjoying every moment of it.
Oh, there's nothing better. And welcome none other than Ryan. What's up, buddy?
Nothing, dude. Hey, Drew, did you watch the stand-up special I was telling you about?
I haven't had a chance to. It's saved on my to-watch list.
I'm going to ask you every time, because I just, after you watch that, I want you to just say I'm actually quite dark and twisted. I just want you to say that after you've seen that. But yeah, man, no, it's going good over here. And John, good to see you again, man. I see you got to know everybody here quickly. Yeah, man, excited to just, you know, shoot the shit and have some fun.
Yeah, did you guys see? I had to show this real quick because I couldn't believe it until I saw it. How cold it was in Kansas City this weekend. Where, dude, these people are paying $20 for a beer and they're getting back to their seat and it's frozen.
All hands. Look how,
that's insane.
The colors high.
Love the music.
Yeah, right. But yeah, that's insane. Their beers, the sodas, everything frozen.
I see that they get money there. I see the problem there. There wasn't one picture of beer. I just saw Bud Light and Michelob.
Yeah, that's true. So, yeah,
there I was going to say it's an American beer. It's no real loss.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. It's like,
well, they should have gone
soda water. Route.
You know, when it's that cold, you always go liquor. You never go beer. That's an amateur mistake right there.
John's portion of the podcast is sponsored by Dale's Pale Ale out of Fort Collins, Colorado.
There you go. And that's actually probably like, what, 6%? 7%?
I think it's 7.
So it's not freezing.
6.5. Yeah, it's not. Yeah.
That's not freezing.
It's not exploding.
Yeah, but then again, you're not buying this at a corporate sports ball game either. So
right. No. Yeah, those are good beers, man. They have those out here too. But yeah, man, like these 2%, they're gonna absolutely freeze and just turn into a slushy quick. But yeah, man, I go hard alcoholic games. You have to. $15 a drink. I'm not getting a beer. I'm getting something that's going to get me there.
You go liquor, the game will go quicker.
Well, you don't want it to go too quick, right? But I do see what you're saying. That, yeah, it's just, you know, once you start getting a little buzzed, it's a good time. Maybe you fight whoever you're standing next to.
You bring in like a little fifth, you know, you can slide the fifth in there and then you just buy a soda and you're good to go.
Yeah, dude. Little rubber flask.
Yep. Yeah, you can't do the metal these days because you got to go through those fucking detectors to get in anywhere.
It's like you guys done, like you've done this before.
Once or twice. Allegedly.
Maybe not. But yeah, man. No, I wanted to see because I know, you know, what were we setting out to talk about initially? You wanted to talk about the calendar thing yesterday, right? That fell through, obviously.
Yep.
I don't know, man. I know John's real knowledgeable with music and it's a fun thing to talk about always, but I don't know. Is there anything that you've been looking into lately, John, that's kind of like grabbing your attention as far as like the music mind control stuff goes?
I've been having a little bit of fun with the, you guys have probably seen the mainstream narratives of how there's a suspicion that Taylor Swift might be some sort of government op. And that makes me chuckle a little bit because I live here west side of Nashville, and I've been in the entertainment industry, music industry specifically, my entire life. And in full disclosure, I helped Taylor and her father stuff her very first CD single, song called Tim McGraw, into padded envelopes and send it to radio before she was really much of anything. And so I've watched a lot of music brands grow up, and this is a whole other subject, and I don't know if you guys want to get into this or not, but I'm a big believer in showbiz, and when I say showbiz, acting is acting, and acting doesn't just take place in movies. Acting takes place in all forms of media. And, you know, you see a lot of people getting bent out of shape with politicians and all, and they're wondering why justice is never brought to these people. And and my answer to that is always quite simple. It's because they are fictional characters. They're fictional characters existing in a commercial narrative. And so you could no more bring a lawsuit against Darth Vader than you could bring a lawsuit against the character of Joe Biden or Donald Trump or any of these characters, because they're fictional characters. And which is why a lot of times you see people using screen names. Yeah, I mean, you know, the screen name known as Barack Obama, you know, as far as we know, was played by a human named Barry Satoru, you know, and if that's even the real name. I mean, there's so many like commercial layers of this shit deep, but the whole thing recently with Taylor Swift possibly being a government op, it's kind of funny, because I like, again, this is going to rub a lot of people wrong, but at some point when you reach a certain level of fame, there are conversations that are had, and you don't advance up to those upper echelons of fame unless you are a team player. And I don't know if you guys saw, has probably been a year ago at this point, you know, Eminem's one of his they call him body doubles, but passed away. Sure, it had nothing to do with the MAGA jabs. Nonetheless, he passed away, and it was a mainstream piece of news. It was reported across a bunch of different formats, you know, Yahoo News, MSN, all of that stuff. But in this guy's obituary write-up, they even said that he appeared as Eminem in concert at public appearances. My point is when you reach a certain level of fame, they've got backups. You know, but like, there isn't just one, put another way, there isn't just one Taylor Swift. And it's
it becomes a brand as well, doesn't it, John?
Yeah. Well,
Taylor Swift started off as a good, wholesome country American singer, girl that's somewhat Christian nationalist, and then moved into the prime time of big pop. So you've got the brand of this character.
Yeah. Yeah, and at some point that brand becomes very, very valuable, and conversations are had. And all I'm saying is, because I've seen it with my own eyes, in fact, I've worked on some of these teams where this has happened, these conversations take place, and the brand as a whole, whoever owns it or manages it, has a decision to make. And you either join the team and go further in your career or advance in your career, or you don't, and you just stay where you're at and live out the rest of your life. But for those that advance further, they have backup plans. You know, I mean, everybody's heard the whole Paul McCartney story. You know, I mean, that, you know, McCartney died in 66 and they just had a body double. To me, that's not that far-fetched, because I see it happening in real life all the time. All of these, I think, anybody can Google either. In the last 6 months or so, there was that picture of the three Tom Cruises going around where, you know, had Tom Cruise and his body doubles. And you can't tell these people apart. And they're not, I'm not even going into the clone, because I think the whole clone thing might be a bit of, you know, woohoo shit. But like, it's not that hard to find people who look like each other. I mean, I've met my doppelganger a couple of different times, where people who look exactly like me. And so if I ever became a big enough brand and I sold out to some corporate interests, they're going to have backup John Gustys in case something real happens to the real John Gusty. They're not going to want to lose the equity that they have in that brand, and they're going to continue it. And that happens in showbiz all the time. That is the essence of showbiz. And so I've been having fun watching mainstream news just float the concept, and they're making fun of it and everything, but like, Taylor Swift might be a government op, to which I would go, yeah, you think? You think a brand that powerful just got that powerful just by happenstance?
Yeah, she's a tool. Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't get that big without being able to be manipulated a little bit. And like you said, John, one of the other aspects that people don't pay enough attention to is the prosthetics. I mean, these masks, these, you know, the real life looking things where you can turn a guy into a pregnant woman in a matter of 5 minutes with prosthetics.
Yeah.
And easy. You know, and these are professionals, and we're talking billions of dollars at stake. They're going to do what it takes to keep their investment.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Going
as would any investor would do with something that they've invested in. These are media entities, usually in the showbiz realm, and it's people don't have a hard time grasping. You take like an actor, actress. You take like Brad Pitt. People don't have a hard time going, you know, I know Brad Pitt's not really that guy in Fight Club. Like they know that, you know, but they can't do the same thing with singers and politicians and religious figures. And I mean, how many different, you know, again, maybe this rubs people the wrong way, but how many different Hillary Clintons have we seen? How many different Osama bin Ladens were there? How many different, you know, Stephen Hawkins have there been? It's like there are these entities, there's a lot invested in them, and these media companies that have built up these narratives have value, and they're not just going to let these narratives die out because, you know, I don't know. I mean,
well, again, John, they're characters in their play.
They're
right?
Characters. Yeah. They're
part of their, they've put together this movie, right? And that's their narrative. And now they need these people to play these roles.
Absolutely.
They need someone in science that was Fauci. They need someone in entertainment. They need someone in Hollywood. They need someone in music everywhere. They need The View, right?
The
they need
figures
these,
too, like yeah, the Kardashians and shit like that.
They need these useful idiots that serve as tools for the system, and that's how it operates, right? Yeah, because they didn't dumb us down with this stuff, we wouldn't be as distracted. We would have more free time. We would have the ability to have rational conversations like we're having right now that you can't have with 90% of society these days.
I like the entertainment scope on this because it really brings it into focus for the other areas. If you narrow it down to just entertainment, actors, singers predominantly, if they have a brand around someone being a pop singer and that's what's making money, that's what the focus groups tell them the buyers want, and they've invested, say, trillions of dollars in this person's brand or this character, they're not going to allow this person to go off creatively and change their style or change their approach to music. They're going to make that person double down because they're too big to fail. And any deviation from what their brand is has the potential to fail, which means loss of profits.
And there are scenarios where, and I'm not saying that this is the case with this one, but there are scenarios where, say a celebrity like you'd mentioned, you know, back in the day, Taylor Swift was a real organic thing that happened. I know because I actually interacted with that human being, but at some point, that real human being and the financial forces that were backing that real human being have the opportunity to make some other business decisions, and they may choose to opt. They may choose to just get bought out. Like it is fully reasonable and sane to assume. And again, I'm not saying that this is happening, but I'm just using Taylor Swift as an example. At some point, the real Taylor Swift brand could have been bought out by a larger entity that had many cosmetic driven Taylor Swift options in the waiting that could continue the Taylor Swift brand as directed. You know, like if it, like, look, let's just, again, anyone can Google the three Tom Cruises. Anyone can look up the Eminem body double dying scenario. That Eminem body double, it said in his obit, he appeared as Eminem in concert. So there are people out there that saw Eminem or thought they saw Eminem in concert that actually saw a body double, and you wouldn't know. You wouldn't know. Eminem is not that. There's a lot of people. It would not be that hard to find someone to look like Eminem, get up on stage, pull a hat down where you really can't see the face, and do an entire show, and people think that they saw Eminem, and what they actually saw was an employee up there playing the part of Eminem, and doing their job, and they're really doing no different of a job than the actor that plays Darth Vader or Yoda or any other fictional character. These are big brands with massive budgets and investments behind them, and they're going to continue that entertainment brand no matter what. And people can wrap their head around it with movies, they can wrap their head around it with everything else. But when you get into the concept of these people who we feel are real human beings, like a Trump or like a Biden. Why can't people make that same logical mental leap there? There may be, Trump is no different of a character than Darth Vader. Biden is no different of a character than Yoda.
I don't know if anyone's seen the TV series The Boys. It's the idea of what superheroes would be like in a real world, and they're very commercialized. They go on brands and stuff like that. There's a character called Starlight, who's a homegrown middle America kind of belt-fed type of a girl. Typical stereotype Christian girl, blonde, white, fights for the American justice and all that type of thing. And they rebrand her as very over-the-top sexualized because that's what the market wants. And there's this whole scene in the series about how she doesn't want to go down that path. And they essentially say, if you want the money and you want this position, you have to buy in or you're out, essentially. Gives a great insight into what the entertainment industry is like. Yeah.
And again, it's entertainment. It's showbiz. I mean, so it shouldn't surprise anybody that showbiz happens in the showbiz industry.
It's kind of interesting too. Like, as you're saying this, it has me thinking, we're getting out of the, we used to really worship celebrities, we still kind of do it, but I would say through the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, it kind of changed up a little bit. 2000s, it was different types of celebrities.
Well, right. And one of the things you saw too in the 80s and 90s was, and Charles Barkley was part of his campaign, where they wanted us to look up to celebrities, athletes, the entertainers, right, as role models.
Right. Right.
And that's where the focus went, like, look up to these people. And then Charles Barkley pushed back, like, no, I'm not your role model. Your parents should be your role model,
because people who are trying to control or manipulate need audience. And that's why celebrity had such great power. Is all you needed to do if you're trying to control or push an agenda is you just needed to co-opt a celebrity or a celebrity brand and get in there and make that brand work for your agenda. And it did. You're right. I graduated high school in 83. So, I'm very well acquainted with the late 70s, all through the 80s, the 90s, and been involved in media the entire time. And I've been on the front side of it and the back side of it. And it's all been showbiz. And it's all worked how showbiz is exactly supposed to work. I've just always been a little bit, I've always been a little bit taken back by how some people out there in normie land can wrap their head around how showbiz works in movies, but they don't understand that it also translates to cable news, to politics, to religion. Well,
that's exactly what I'm getting at, is that these theories are starting to become more mainstream, where people are maybe saying, like, well, shit, is there maybe a couple clones of this celebrity? There's only one of this guy. And then maybe we're getting away from that a little bit, right? And now we're starting to look up to people like Mr. Beast. And I'm not saying any of us here are, but people, little kids are looking up to internet personalities. And how easy is that to fake? I mean, I could sit here with some AI graphics and I could be Mr. Beast easily. You know what I mean? That's the easiest thing in the world to fake.
You know what's cool about what you just said is that is, you know, I mean, there's always a pendulum swing on everything, right? And I think the pendulum has swung so far to the digital fake side that it's starting to swing back. And I've got two sons. One's 26, one's 18, which are interesting ages, and I'll touch on that later if it comes up. But my 18-year-old, I saw him and his peers this year start to, especially during the holiday season, I saw them get excited about physical media. That's a big passion topic for me. Like I love physical media. If I buy music, I want to hold it. If I buy a movie, I want to own it. I don't want anything nothing digital is real. Digital is all fake. And I've seen like the 18 and under crowd start to embrace physical things.
Like records, old school
Yeah.
records,
Oh,
vinyl and stuff.
well,
Yeah.
and vinyl had an amazing year, and I know a lot of that has to do with the aforementioned Taylor Swift, but so a lot of those numbers are artificially inflated. But my older son, who's 26, about to be 27, his peer group, think about what they've been through. They lived through, my son's a big gamer. They lived through the day. If you're 26, 27 in that ballpark, they remember the day when you could buy a video game console, you bought the cartridge, and that was it. Those days are long gone. Now you got to buy the console, you got to buy the cartridge, and none of it works without the online component of all of that stuff. And then just before the new year, I think it was Sony, if I'm not mistaken, Sony did yet another one of those things where anybody that bought movies off of their PlayStation or whatever, they jacked them all from you. They're all gone. Like, so kids that age, 26, 27, they've already been fucked a
Oh, yeah.
couple of times. Like they don't have their they don't have physical video game cartridges anymore. They just got all their movies jacked from them. They don't own physical music anymore. So I think the under 30 crowd is starting to become wise to the difference between physical and digital. Those of us who are older, we already know that. It's like, I get that in some instances, digital is a huge convenience, but it's also not real. If you're hungry, a digital fucking taco isn't going to do you any good. You know, you
Right.
need a physical taco, you know? And likewise, if you are a connoisseur of media, you want that physical media because no one can take that away from you, and you're not being tracked and traced while you're consuming it. And you can
And
transfer that from person to, I can loan it to you guys, you know?
John, they can't manipulate it because
And they
one of the
can't change
things
it. Yeah.
that we keep talking about, Drew and I have talked about this a couple times, is how these streaming services, they're manipulating these movies now. They're editing them from their original versions. They're cutting out scenes. They're changing characters, you know, all to meet their new social, you know, agenda.
Absolutely. No, again, that's why I love. I've got an actual, I mean, if you guys want, I can, you know, we can cut and I can go grab it, but I've got an actual original pressing of 1984, the book 1984 by Orwell.
Oh, that's cool. That's
And if you,
nice.
like
Yeah.
literally the first pressing as it was, as it came out. And you can take that book and you can buy a brand new copy today off of wherever, Amazon, whatever. And you can go page for page, and they've altered entire sections of that. Like it's not the same text that it was when it originally came out. And I realized that's 1984, and there's a whole, you know, if there ever was a manuscript that they're gonna fuck with the editing, that's probably gonna be one of the ones that they're gonna fuck with. But think about what they, I mean, I love old dictionaries. I love old, you know, I collect old dictionaries. I collect old encyclopedias. I collect old reference books because they can't edit that shit. And I can go downstairs right now and I can get you a dictionary from the 1850s and we can look up a word like gender. And I can tell you what the word gender meant in the 1850s. And that's not what it means anymore. They literally changed the meaning of words. And so that's the power of physical media, is it can't be edited. And my hope is that I'm seeing the younger generation, the under 30 crowds, it's all that shit starting to click in, because you got to understand, like we were born into a culture where we knew politicians and corporations were, it's a cultural meme. Politicians, corporations, they're not our friends, whatever. So I don't think any of us are our age trusted any of that stuff. Imagine being 18 or younger today. Like, they've got no faith in anything. Because you can't, what are you going to have faith in? I mean, nothing is to believe. I mean, I'm graduated high school in 83, and it's like, it's taken a long time for me to kind of deprogram myself and go, shit, nothing I was taught is anywhere close to accurate, you know? And so I'm truly skeptical. Kids that are 18 ish now, they're you can't even call it skeptical. They have no faith in anything because everything that they've born into is bullshit.
It's like everything. Cynical almost, yeah. Right? Like, and I say this all the time, actually, like your older son, you said he's 27.
Yeah. About to be. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that. I'm 32. Drew, I'm not sure how old you are. You're a similar age to me, right?
36 is he.
36. So yeah, I mean, I think that like that age range is kind of like a really interesting era to be born in. If I could have it my way, I'd be like Matt's age, right? Like Matt, you're just a little older than me, but like I'd like to be a little older when 9/11 happened, just to try and like actually relive that and understand it more from that perspective. But people like in the age range that I mentioned, 36 to, you know, we'll say 26, they were born before the internet was mainstream. They got to see the best of the analog world, like when it peaked, and then also like the switch over to digital, and now that it's fully digital. The people that have been born since like the pure digital age, they would be clueless if shit fell apart, right? The people that are, you know, so old now that they don't understand the digital stuff that's going on, they didn't really get to capitalize or benefit from like this amazing technology that's out there. So it's interesting to really get the best of both worlds being like a 90s baby, we'll say,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's an interesting thing, man. It's something I think about a lot, and I've heard other people mention it. One of my favorite comedians, Tim Dillon, talked about that. It's like, you know, when you're 9 years old, you're born in 1991, like I am, 9 years old, you and your friends are going to go meet up, and you're meeting up at this spot at this time. And if they're not there at this time, like they're forgotten for the day. There's no way to reach out. There's no way to get in contact. If you don't know where the kids are going, the group's going, you're fucked for the day, right? Yeah. You can meet up tomorrow. And then now it's just like, people can't even figure out where to go and meet up friends without texting and getting like GPS coordinates or whatever it is to go and like find the friend group. So,
but that old dynamic that you just mentioned, that held you to a certain level of accountability. It's like, you knew if you didn't meet your friends at the movie theater at 5 o'clock, you were going to be left behind. And there was no device. There was no magic device to go, hey, I'm here, you know, come pick me up, right, or whatever. You just, so people were a little more self-sufficient in their personal management of time and just tasks and all. And now, like you say, I mean, there are people that literally can't get from their house to the grocery store without Waze telling them how to get there, you know?
Right.
And there's too much reliance. My nephew's trying to go on a fishing trip, his first one. He's only 21, going out with some mates for Australia Day. He wants to camp and he wants to catch snap, which is a large fish in Australia. And he wasn't sure what type of braided line to have on his fishing rod. Instead of asking his father, his grandfather, or me, his uncle, he's on his phone frantically trying to find a video. None of the videos are lining up with his search engine responses. And I said, why don't you just go down to the bait and tackle shop and ask one of the guys that works there? He'll probably put it on for you and show you how to do it. Oh, no, I can't do that. The social anxiety is just too much.
Yeah.
That's so funny, man. Yeah, it's, and it almost is like a thing where it's like, yeah, you don't want to give anyone the benefit of having the upper hand on you when it comes to information. Like your nephew might have felt like that was embarrassing to go and ask a stranger for some advice, even though that's what that stranger is paid to fucking do.
Yeah, but I think Drew nailed it. Is there's this social anxiety just for one human to go up to another human and have like a human interaction and go, how do you put this fishing line together to, in order to accomplish this goal that I want. Like the default is I'm going to go to YouTube and look for a video versus, you know, I'm going to go to the, you know, to the, in real life, I'm going to go down to the bait and tackle shop, or I'm going to go to the hardware store and ask, you know, Larry who works at the hardware store, how to do this thing that I need to know how to do. That's where, I mean, you know, that I grew up. If you needed to know something, you had to find a source. If you wanted to know plumbing, you need to go find somebody who knew plumbing and ask them.
Oh man. Yeah. Dude, yeah. You nailed it right there with the plumbing thing. Cause I recently put in a hot water heater, and it's one of those things. And like every time, cause I don't leave my house too often. I actually kind of like isolation a little bit. I do enjoy talking with people clearly. Like, you know, I have a podcast. I talk with people all over the world. But every time that I have a face-to-face interaction with somebody, I consider them a friend almost, man. Like it's wild. When I was in Philadelphia, I was sitting at a bar in an airport and just talking with people. And it's wild. Like you bond with these people so quickly just by having like a genuine human experience. And when I was putting this water heater in, I went and I talked with this guy that owns this old-fashioned, he's an old Jewish guy. The building's been here forever, like since the 40s or whatever. And it's like been passed down from his great grandparents to him and all this stuff. And you know, he was a mask wearer. He wanted us to all wear masks when we walked in and shit. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be whack talking with this guy. But we ended up like really having a fun conversation about like just plumbing. Like I was like learning shit from him. He was telling me stuff. I ended up pulling my mask down under my chin. And he's like, yeah, these are kind of bullshit. I just feel like we have to do these, you know? So like, we're not that different from people that we don't feel like the initial reaction, someone that's wearing a mask, you might fucking really get along with those people really well, even if you hate the mask thing,
you know,
and you just have to talk to people, man. It's wild what it does.
You so nailed that. Like I went through the entire events of 2020 forward and I didn't change anything I did. I didn't change where I went. I didn't change my behavior. I never put a mask on, and I never did any of that. I just like, cause I could go into a whole other thing. You know, my wife's been disabled for, you know, going on 20 years now. I've looked at more blood and cellular behavior than your average person. So I kind of know what I'm talking about in that realm. So when all of this 2020 viral nonsense came out, it was, you know, I just had a different perspective than a lot of people had. But I went through all of 2020 forward and I just smiled my way through it. I was just nice. You know, I mean, every once in a while, somebody would ask me to put on a mask. I'd be like, no, thank you. You know, and I never got kicked out of any place. I don't have any Karen scenarios that I can tell you guys about. But what not enough of us did, and I think that's kind of the theme of what we're all kind of discussing here is I wish more people knew that it was okay. Like the plumber guy that Ryan that you were just talking about, like when you pulled your mask down, you realize he was there with you. He was just, you know, he wasn't passionate about that. You know, he was just doing it because he thought. I had people, I never had anybody, I went into so many stores, I never wore a mask. A lot of times I was the only person in there not wearing a mask. I don't have any stories of anyone coming up to me and being an asshole, but I do have like multiple stories of people coming up and thanking me. I mean, why? And it's like, well, because you're not wearing a mask. And it's like, you don't have to wear a mask either. Just don't. Yeah. Just be nice.
But it's that safety net, right? Nobody wants to be the first one, but they'll gladly.
But once somebody does, then and again, that's kind of like, you know, I mean, Matt, before we even started, that was what I was talking about the art of conversation. This is just hearing other people have conversation or seeing other people behave in certain ways. That's all some people need is they just need that validation and go, okay, I was thinking that, or I was wanting to do that anyways, but now I see somebody else doing it. It makes it easier for, you know, that person to come out and do it.
It goes back to that thing where like, if your car breaks down on the side of the road and you're just asking for help, no one's going to really help you. But if people see you trying to push your own car out of the way, everyone's going to come
help. Yeah, you're going to have people lining up to help you push.
Yeah, man. And like I've experienced that firsthand. My old car has broken down in the middle of a freaking intersection and I have pushed it out of the way, and so many people just like park their car and come and help, man. Like, it's nuts, but yeah, dude, it's just there's something to be said about just old school interactions with people. Like, you will not believe the people that you would get along with and have like a good connection with, and you don't get their phone number, you don't do anything, you never see them again. But every once in a while, you'll just think back like, oh man, that was a cool dude that I was talking with at the airport, or that, you know, this chick at this bar was a nice lady or whatever, you know. It's a wild kind of experience. It's human,
majority,
too.
Yeah, the majority of us are most people are decent people. I've said it a bunch of different ways in past conversations. It's like, and again, I mean, I know this will rub a lot of people wrong, but like, I don't know that I've actually ever met a racist person. I've never met a terrorist. I've never met a homophobic person. I think these are all problems that have been created. Now, I've met people who have said some bigoted shit, and I've met people who have said some dumbass shit, but I've never met, like take the word racism. That word gets thrown around like it's fucking candy. Okay. Racism means you are against a fucking race of people. You want to see that race of people like eliminated, gone from your life altogether. Who do you know in your real life that feels that way about a race of people? I mean, for real, like if I paid you guys $1,000 a person to come up with like someone who's real, who would come on camera with me and go, I hate Chinese people. You know, I want them, like, I don't know any real racist people. I don't know any real homophobic people. I know people who would probably not want their kids to be gay, but that doesn't mean they're homophobic. That just means that that's just not, you know, I'm as heterosexual as they come, but I've got tons of gay friends, and I don't give a shit who you're sleeping with. You know,
John, will I get $3,000 if I find someone who's racist, homophobic, and a terrorist?
if they'll come on camera with me and you, and they will go, my name is so and so, I live in this address, and I'm racist, I'm homophobic, and I'm a terrorist. You know, maybe, but again, I don't think these problems really exist. I think they're just these social constructs that. It gets enough people agitated that they become these memes. And again, I don't know. I'd love to meet a real racist. I'd love to have a conversation with a real racist person. I'd like to know what would make that person tick. You know,
I agree with what you're saying. I see where you're going, because it goes back to like my love for comedy. I forget what comedian said this, but it takes someone to really trust you to show their racism, right? Like no one is going to go up to strangers and be like, man, I hate this group of people. Like if someone's confiding that in you, they trust you so much to just be like, wow, like you're sharing some deep hatred with me.
And being racist or homophobic, those aren't passive things. Like you got to be active in that. You know what I mean? Right. So like if you're really racist, that's not a passive
feeling.
Right. Doesn't this go back to Daryl Davis, the African American man who actively went out and spoke to Klans members, and he actually became good friends with them and switched their thinking? They clearly weren't racist to begin with.
That's a great story. Yeah,
that Dave Chappelle skit where he's the head of the KKK. he's a blind black man.
He's a blind. He divorces his wife because she's an N-word lover. It's so funny, dude.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, man. And then like the homophobia thing. Like the phobia, I think that was a term that was created because no one's afraid of gay people. It's almost empowering people to be gay because anyone that doesn't agree with them is afraid of them. And if you're afraid of something, that's giving them power. It's not a fear, even for like, I definitely like, you know, like you said yourself, John, like I'm very straight. I don't think that homosexuality is sustainable. I'll say that. If everyone was gay, I don't think any of us would be here, you know? So it's not natural. That's my opinion. But I'm not afraid of it.
No. And I mean, my, you know, my wife's wedding dress was crafted by a pretty high profile drag queen here in the Nashville area, you know? And what wonderful, wonderful human being. I am far from homophobic. In fact, like I said, I've mentioned several times, I graduated in 83. So I, you know, I'd lived in a time that was like before Boy George, you know, and when like Boy George came out and the Culture Club was a thing in like 81, 82, for a minute, it was like, you know, that's not a girl, that's a dude. For like a minute, there was a novelty about it, but nobody cared. Like there was no backlash against it because everyone loved that music and it was super trendy and everybody loved that and we'd already been through Bowie's androgyny and the New York Dolls androgyny and all that, so like it wasn't that big of a deal. And so I can tell you, I mean, I grew up in Tempe, Arizona. I went to a very 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 like racially integrated public high school. Tons of different ethnicities and tons of different sexuality options. Nobody cared if anybody in 83, nobody cared if anyone.
Do you know who the biggest homophobes were in the 80s and 90s? They were the closeted politicians. Those were the biggest homophobes because they were afraid that if people found out that they were gay, then they'd flip on them. Homophobia.
Ryan went to the crux of it, though, the fear. It's not like we're seeing videos of people freaking out like over spiders when they see a gay person.
Yeah,
it's not like
run,
you see someone turn over a rock and a gay
street,
guy
right?
goes, hello, and people freak out.
Well, dude, this stuff goes back to, I mean, old days, too. I was watching Gangs of New York with Kim the other day, and Daniel Day-Lewis, I think, is the dude in that, right? Like, just any role that dude is in, he's that guy. But... like they, when is that filmed? The 20s? Is that when? I mean, obviously not filmed then, but when is that set place?
No,
the 20s,
that's
right?
Earlier than that. Oh, that's 1800s.
Okay,
if not earlier,
American Civil War, isn't it? Yeah. Set around the American Civil War.
I think it's like late 1800s. Yeah.
Okay. Well, my bad. Yeah, I mean, a long time ago, right? But it's pretty historically accurate with the way, you know, they're anti-Irish, all these things, and Daniel Day-Lewis talks about Sheehy's in that. Right. Like there's a group of Sheehy's in the, like there's the Chinese, there's the whites, there's the Irish, there's all these different groups. And there's a whole clan of like transgender drag queen type people. And they're allowed to operate back then as long as he gets his cut of the money that they make.
They were right? in Roman times. Right. I mean, Greeks, go back. There were always these gender benders.
Always. Yeah. And there always will be. And it's only been recently that it's been artificially made into this cultural meme that's a big deal. Like again, in the early 80s, I can tell you, like, and I wasn't some closeted kid. I was playing in a band. I was out there in the public. Nobody cared. Nobody cared in the early 80s if you were gay. Nobody cared.
It always came back to sex work as well. Like in the Roman period, in that time, what you're talking about with Gangs of New York, they're all sex workers because this is a time in history when if you didn't have money to live your life and to get by, you're in a lot of trouble. And people with very low skills, they sought out the oldest profession there was, and that was sex work.
And there's always going to be dudes that want dudes. There's going to be girls that want girls, and every other combination. It's always been, always will be.
But what you said before, John, it wasn't pushed, right? It wasn't put out there in the forefront. Like this is the way to go. Like it's such a minority. It was treated as such, right? Well, it was just left to be. Now,
microcosm turned into a macro.
Yeah, now you look at it, and I mean this whole gender affirming nonsense.
I don't think that the eugenics puppeteers had the foothold then that they have now.
Yes.
Like now the eugenics, that's the one common thread I see running through all upper echelons of celebrity and religion and politicians. They're all into eugenics, and which I'm not into eugenics, but I can understand the allure, because when you're into eugenics, you are literally trying to play God. You are literally trying eugenics crowd, which is in control right now of a lot of people's minds. You know, they cannot have the individuality of separate genders. they cannot have the creativity of separate genders. So they have to blur those lines.
And isn't it very interesting that this really came to the forefront post-World War II and in lieu of Operation Paperclip, when we know that there was tons of eugenics going on? It's funny how they say that the majority of it was going on in Nazi Germany, and that's total bullshit, because there were experiments going on in Russia. There were experiments going on here.
North America had death panels.
Yeah.
Wasn't Dr. Bill Gates' father one of the key eugenics? You know.
Yes, he was. He was part of death panels.
Yeah, he's early Planned Parenthood, right?
Yeah.
With Margaret Sanger. He was a big fan. You know, you guys mentioned eugenics, and a lot of people mention eugenics. Have you heard of euthenics before? Yes. Euthenics.
I heard you talk about it, Ryan, on your show.
Because that's what I wonder if that eugenics term was something that was put out there so that we continue to talk about that. Because it sounds like what all these problems come from is euthenics. And euthenics, I'll pull up a definition real quick and I'll just read it real fast. Euthenics is a science that deals with development of human well-being by improvement of living conditions. It is concerned with establishing optimal living conditions for plants, animals, or humans, especially through proper provisioning and environment. And it's also the study of the control of the environment, especially with a view to improving the health and living standards of the human race. So, in short, what I learned looking into this previously is that euthenics is trying to change the current generation, or eugenics is focusing on future generations.
It seems like euthenics is the umbrella organization, and eugenics exists underneath euthenics.
Sure, they can both
utopia,
which obviously utopia is a place that doesn't fucking exist, right? But on the way there, there's a lot of horrible things that happen, man. I mean, how are you going to tell the first ever elected Down syndrome politician in Spain? How are you going to tell her that she doesn't have a place in the future? You know what I mean? It's just one of those things where it's like, it's very tough.
I'm curious, but like Drew just brought something up. Like, I'm curious, like, what you guys think about this? Because we're here in the States. We're starting a whole new season of America's Next Top President. And and all of the shit that goes along with that. And I am to the point where, like, with my peers, the people that are of my age group, I've got no more fucks to give. I'm all out of fucks. And we've watched enough of these 2 to 4 year religious ceremonial cycles. Here's my question to you guys. Like, and Drew, I mean, definitely chime in, because this is kind of a worldwide question, but I'm going to frame it into like a U.S., like the Church of the Red and Blue here in the U.S. Like, can anyone cite any example, anything where the Church of Red and Blue, whether it's blue or red, anything that they have improved? Like, has food gotten any better, cheaper, more abundant, healthier? Has air gotten any healthier? Is water free and cleaner? Are schools churning out better students? Are we any more self-sufficient or better in any possible? Has that religion improved anything? Are there any examples of any improvement at all? To which I think the obvious answer is no. I'd love to hear an example of something that's been improved, but I've yet to have anyone actually answer that. So I'm just going to jump ahead and go, if not, then we are seriously dealing with some global, like, Stockholm syndrome.
They poison the shit out of our food and water. You know, you're under an operation. You're being controlled.
I get that is happening. But that is the case in any abusive relationship. In any abusive relationship, the abuser is being controlled and manipulated. But at some point, the abuser or the abused have to come to the conclusion that, like, if I go back to him, he's going to continue to hit me. He's going to keep cheating. He's going to keep lying. He's, you know, I'm just using the man-woman relationship analogy, but, like, we ought to know better.
And I think you did. We got a small dose of that human, you know, people, quote unquote, waking up in 2020. right? I think that was a large operation for humanity to get a wake-up call. Now,
I agree. That was a silver lining in all of that 2020 nonsense. It caused a lot more people to snap out of it. And if nothing else, at least now visually, now we know who everybody is. You know, because people are literally wearing their allegiances on their face with their face diapers.
Well, and people will, though, they're more willing to look at these things too now, I think. You know, I think there's a lot more people that question the medical system. There's a lot more people that question the food system now and are looking to grow their own food, you know, start their own gardens, you know, that whole movement. That homesteading is really picking up now.
Homesteading, homeschooling, just all sorts of sovereignty, self-sufficient areas are growing. But there is still at least a third of the population that is under this spell, so to speak.
You know what it is, John?
80%. 80%.
I'm with Ryan.
I got something to say real quick, like, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to say, politically, it's most noticeable.
Myself a conservative my entire life. I've been in the punk rock and individuality and all that my entire life. I don't see how someone could be Republican and conservative at the same time. I don't see how those two things can coexist. I don't see how you can be libertarian and conservative. If you are a statist, if you believe in the religion of the state, then that is a liberal mindset. And so all Democrats, all Republicans, all libertarians, those are all liberal mindsets. So I think what's happening, at least here in the States, is people who have identified as Republican or conservative are realizing that they've been duped as far as definitions go. Because you cannot possibly be a conservative Republican. You just it's like being a dry glass of water or a frozen flame. It's repping your colors, right? That's what it is.
And like, sorry, just real quick, what I was trying to say, like what you guys were talking about a second ago with Matt, I think you were saying like the school system is tricking people into feeling like they have to vote and all these different things. They're being attacked all different kinds of ways, the food and all this stuff. I think it's so much more simple than that. And I think why people vote and why people like take pride in their vote is because they want to fuck over the other side, right? Like the Republicans get so much pride about liberal tears, right? Like this is like a huge thing for that right side. And then the left is like, oh yeah, your guy lost, like, you know, go cry about it. He's going to go to prison, all this stuff. And like that recent election was a preview of like all future elections. They're going to get more divisive.
Isn't that bullying and kind of the essence of war
but we can't look for logic in what's coming from that side, right? And really, I mean, like I clearly lean more to the right, but there's so much hypocrisy on that side too. There's a ton. I struggle even to say that there's less than there is on the liberal side, because with a dad that worked at home and a mom that worked outside of the house. But I saw so many kids that grew up just fine with, you know, the opposite of what I grew up with the mom not even working and just staying home. That's not a possibility anymore. That's something that I think was constructed to make women feel empowered that they can go out and out earn their husbands, right? So it's a pissing contest.
Again, it's a battle. It's war. It's separating the family and all
that happy horse shit they do.
It's just being the better. It's being the best. Like, oh yeah, I'm red. I'm better than the blue. This four years around, or whatever it is, man. Like
I always understood, and maybe I learned it wrong in the beginning, but I always understood that the definition of conservative and liberal is when you've got things on the table like personal liberties or freedoms or, you know, property or things that, you know, are of self, you are either liberal with giving those responsibilities or those freedoms or those liberties away to a third party, or you are very conservative in keeping those to yourself, and you're very conservative in giving those away. So I've always thought of liberal and conservative in those terms. It's like a liberal person is very liberal in offloading personal responsibilities to a third party in hopes that they'll do it better. A conservative person is going to hold those responsibilities close to the vest and not be so liberal in giving them up. And so that's why I say, I don't know how anybody that worships the District of Columbia here in the United States could possibly consider themselves a conservative.
Yeah.
Because if you are worshiping the District of Columbia, you are clearly into offloading personal responsibilities to a third party. Because you do it every 2 to 4 years in some weird religious ceremony where, you know, I've heard people say the single biggest responsibility one has is to
feel more comfortable doing it. And that's not the case here. That's not what we're talking about in this instance. Like, just because the social norm is pushing you in that direction doesn't mean we automatically should go that way. That's a bear trap that you're just going to fall into and regret it instantly. And that's what they're doing with a lot of these malleable. And why are they going after kids?
Wasn't social norm, like at least as a young person, wasn't the social norm something that you automatically bucked against? I mean, what about counterculture? What happened to counterculture?
Yeah.
Well, the CIA infiltrated it a long time ago.
Counterculture used to be like legitimate people like myself and perhaps the three of you who would go, you know, I don't know that I necessarily want to go in that direction just because everyone else is going in that direction. I might hold my place, or I might go in that direction just because, you know, just because everyone else is going in the opposite direction. But there used to be like a legit counterculture. And
it's Black Lives Matter.
That lived up to the hype. In the industry,
yeah, Morrissey. I think honestly, out of everybody, it's funny because in context at the time, Morrissey took a lot of crap for being, you know, androgynous or gay or whatever, and a lot of people gave him, you know, a lot of shit for being, you know, light footed or, you know, he had, you know, begonias sticking out of his back pocket or whatever. But that guy ended up he was who he said he was. And he maintained it even to this day. He is who he said he was. I think John Lydon of the Sex Pistols is also another one who, agree with them or not, he is who he said he was. You know, even though he was part of arguably one of the first boy bands that was ever put together. You know, but again, he was who he said he was. And outside of Morrissey and John Lydon and maybe a few others, you know, Ian Brown, Stone Roses. Held it down. There's far and few between, man.
You ever meet the Metallica guys? Any of the Metallica guys? Because they're supposedly conservative.
I actually am kind of close to that scenario and probably shouldn't comment.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't want to get anybody in trouble.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'll just say from an outside perspective, you know, like them living in San Francisco and then all moving out of San Francisco, I feel like that's like it says a lot about how things have changed in their heads. You know, that's just, like I said, an outside perspective. I find them interesting.
When it comes to that counterculture discussion around the pendulum swing to who's the counterculture and who's not between left and right, I get in a lot of trouble in the Australian scene because all these people have flocked to the freedom parties, the minor parties, and have gone very staunchly conservative. And they always say to me, Drew, you've seemed very traditional. You've got all these things that you say, but you don't back these parties. Why? And I always go to, they don't change anything. It doesn't matter which government you get in. They're going to fuck you over at any time. So then they say, what are you black people? What's your
bleep with? I don't care who you worship. I don't care. As long as you're not causing me harm, actual harm, not you know, insulting or inconvenient. I mean, actual harm. As long as you're not hurting me or stealing from me, then, you know, again, you know, if we want to be left alone and we want that grace and mercy of individuality and creativity, you got to give it. You know, and I've got some really, really, really fucking harshly founded beliefs, but none of my beliefs make any demands of anybody else. And I think that's where a lot of people fall short. Is I think a lot of people have beliefs that make demands of other people. Mm-hmm. And when your beliefs start making demands of other people, that's a little bit fucked up. This shouldn't be that way.
Mm. Yeah, it's a good way to look at it. It's interesting.
which ironically the progressive movement's kind of been based on. It's making demands of people that really it shouldn't be.
Well, the progressive movement is into control. There, if you're progressive, you either want to be controlled or you want to control. You know, you're into control on one end of the stick. You know.
You think that's why they're like putting all those things, the archetypes of liberalism or progressivism, they're putting those archetypes into society. Like they're you see them in movies all the time, and then you see them in like the fetish world and stuff too, like the subs and doms, right? Like all these people, like it seems like they're this stuff is just absolutely thrown into every aspect of society and culture.
I mean, control's an aphrodisiac, man. I mean, if you like to be controlled, well, then, you know, that's the whole dominatrix thing, you know? But if you want to be the controller, well, then that's the whole, you know, lord, master, you know, master servant thing, you know? So control's a motherfucker. People get enchanted by it. You know, whether they want to be controlled or whether they want to control, it's
can't be a tax agent if you're conservative. But there's got to be some other jobs out there where
lawyers.
It's like, dude,
you can't possibly be a conservative lawyer.
A lawyer, okay.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't because the whole act of lawyering is anything legal is commercial, and all of this whole facade of government is built on the artificial corporation acting as government. You know, I mean, there once was actual government, and then slowly but surely government was taken over and by these commercial entities that
and JFK got shot and here we are.
And then we go off the gold standard, and it's like yeah. I live in the state of Tennessee. It's like at one point there was a state of Tennessee that was actual land and the people lived on it. But at some point the state of Tennessee incorporated, became a corporation, a commercial entity. And now it's all legal. And so you can't be a conservative and exist in that weird fake commercial fictional world. I mean, there's a reason why it's called corporate fiction, because it's not real. And I think most real conservatives exist in the real world. They want real, like, I want real control. I want real ownership. I want real, you know, I want real stuff. I want real music, real books, real everything, you know?
So by that logic, then they can't be judges either. So any conservative judge on the Supreme Court is just another liberal.
Yeah. The entire legal system is nothing but commercial liberals.
Okay.
It comes down to your definition of conservative as well, and how much it's changed, because there seems to be a schism in what conservative means to be, because you could apply gender roles and certain jobs that are traditionally held by women that men are now in, and vice versa. Like if you see a man as a childcare worker or a nurse or working with the elderly, in a lot of conservative groups, they'd say that that's...
I think a true conservative could be a federal... couldn't hold a federal position of any kind.
Yeah.
It'd only be like a sheriff, right? Like that's the only...
Sheriffs are different, because sheriffs are actually elected, actually elected positions.
And constitutional, like they uphold the Constitution, supposedly. Yeah.
Well, the constitution of the country, not the constitution of the corporation.
You know, sure.
You always got to distinguish which constitution are we talking about.
Absolutely. Know? Yeah, man. No, it's just an interesting thought, Matt. That's
a fun question. Yeah, I like that. Thanks for posing that.
Yeah, no, that's a good one, because you think about it and it makes no sense. But in this system, though, they have to balance it out. Otherwise, everything would skew one direction. So you have to have Republican lawyers, and it's injustices and police officers and things like that.
Yeah, but there's this whole like that whole fake two side thing. It's like
it's all show. It's all for entertainment. It's for division. It's for the why can't we have three parties then?
Yeah. Right? Well, why does there need to be a party? You know, I'll ask you guys this. Do you think that as a human being, does human being A have the right to walk up to human being B and just declare non-consensual authority over them?
No,
definitely not.
No, because that would be slavery.
Well, and my idea is the government could stop working tomorrow. No one would know about it. Government could disappear for a month, and people still show up to work. People still go about their daily business.
I think if most rational thinking people put aside, just stop all the Fox, CNN, news, all that shit, and just think about it. We don't need to be governed. We're not children. You know, we don't need, you don't need to be governed. You just, it's absurd. And if you wanted to enter into a governed situation,
just us.
Save the best for last, my friend.
I think it's a strange situation.
The world's not black and white, and we say that in everything. The world works in various shades of gray, and politics has just put things in black and white and kind of created that team division, team blue, team red, and it keeps that momentum of the pendulum swinging back and forward through force, and it's force of division. Yet if people were to sit in the middle somewhere where they could agree on something, that's where you see fundamental change happen. I think that's where you see true progressivism and true conservatism at the same time.
Yes. And if you don't align with the team, I mean, how many people really fit into a conservative liberal box? 100%. You know, most people, your ideas kind of mesh a little bit. You know, you cross lines here and there.
I could never be a true conservative when it comes to the idea of technology. If I was a true conservative, I'd be still playing a field with a horse and cart. Nothing wrong with that. But the progressive side of that is technology made things a little bit easier for us so we can do other things in our life. Well, you can't sit in either side of completely progressive or completely conservative, because then you don't progress as a society in any way.
Well, I think it's like masculine, feminine. Like it's absurd to expect somebody to be completely masculine or completely feminine. We all have masculine and feminine qualities. We all have if we're going to use terms like liberal and conservative, we've all got, you know, like when it comes to freedoms and liberties, I'm extremely conservative. But when it comes to let's just say social things like sharing, you know, I'm kind of big on, you know, I live out in a rural area, so I'm pretty prepped for things. It's like I'm very liberal with my, I guess my personal wealth, put it that way. Like if I've got a neighbor that needs something, I'm very liberal with that. So I'm always, why do we have to be one or the other? I'm constantly moving between liberal and conservative depending upon the scenario. And
he's gonna do a conspiracy 3,000. Yeah. All the names of the people. But yeah, dude, it's I agree with what you're saying, John. Like, it's absolutely like a real thing. You can't just go through, if you were 100% masculine as men, like we would just, I mean, how would you get anything done? You know what I mean?
It's not natural. No, right? There's no balance. Everything has to have balance.
Yeah. 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 And I think that it is important. And maybe that's why our society, as fucked up as we say it is, it's pretty good. Like, you know, maybe that's why we have the two political sides, because it's a side and a B side, a positive and a negative side. Maybe there's just got to be that dichotomy for lack of a better term. They are
right. It's an A and a B, but we're the energy in the middle that makes that battery charge.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe it has to be like that. I like, is it possible that maybe there has to be suffering in the world? Is it possible that maybe it's just like without suffering, there wouldn't be any bliss or something? Is it possible that horrible things have to happen to experience great things?
What about your example of, like, you know, when your car broke down and you started to push it, you know, like people will come out of the woodwork to help you push your car. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're thinking masculine or feminine or conservative or liberal. I think that's a very human experience. They see another human being who needs help. And unless you're an absolute fucking douchebag, you're going to want to help that person, you know?
Sure. But maybe if I had a bunch of MAGA stickers on my car or a bunch of swastikas, well, maybe I wouldn't get so much help.
Yeah, but
so
then, maybe there but, is. But then you'd be virtue signaling, and I would say that would be a very liberal thing to do, you know?
Right.
I mean, because most people who are conservative don't really, most people who are truly conservative don't give a shit about virtue signaling, because you know, I as a conservative, I don't fucking care. I you know, the only sticker I have on my car, I think, is a Pennywise sticker from, you know, Southern California punk band, you know, but you know, and I only have that on there because I like the band, you know. I don't give a fuck whether anybody else likes it or not, or yeah. not, but you know, but so I don't know. I think maybe, most of us humans are modulating between all of these things at right. any time, and that's just what being human is. I mean, sometimes I think anybody that's in a relationship with another person, male or female, knows it's all give and take. I mean, sometimes my wife is the dominant person. You know, I mean, today, you know, she was very dominant today. She had some things she needed to get done, and she needed heard, and she needed, you know, attention on. So she's very dominant today, but tomorrow she'll probably be very, you know, very much, you know, non-dominant, and I might be the dominant one. It's a give and take, you know, it's a balance. And that's why we have a healthy relationship, is because neither one of us is really in charge. We're sharing this human experience together. And I think that's what all healthy relationships do. That's what healthy friendships do. You know, it's like, you know, you know, all of us have good friends, and our good friends will tell us, you know, I love when my friends say, John, you know, you're being a bit of an asshole, you know, and you know, stop.
You need that, right? You need people to put you in check.
It's I'm thankful for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm thankful for that because, one, how good of a friend is it that'll tell you that you're being an asshole? You know, you want friends like that. And I think, you know, kids want parents like that, and partners want spouses like that. And, you know, boyfriends want girlfriends like that. Girlfriends want boyfriends like that. You need that balance and that honesty where the other, it's just a give and take. And we just are the society we live in right now, we are marinating in a lot of narcissism, and narcissism is just all self. It's just me.
It's all ego.
Me.
Yeah, it's all ego.
And you can't. Nothing gets done effectively or constructively when it's done in an egotistical way. It just never works that way.
Yeah. On a lower level, it's like having the friend that tells you got the piece of spinach in your teeth or the booger in your nose. Like, you need someone to be like, hey, dude, like, fix that real quick, you know?
And you're always thankful about it. You might be embarrassed, but you're thankful somebody told you.
Yeah.
At least somebody has the balls to tell you.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
That application in a relationship is perfect, because a lot of people say, oh, my wife was on my back to do all these chores. But by the time you go out and you cut back the branches on the tree, or mow the lawn, or build her something that she needed built, in that time, you think that she might be on your back and she's being domineering, but she brings you out a coffee. She'll bring you out lunch. At the end of it, you go, geez, that actually looks really good. I did need to do that. Yeah. And that's that give and take that you have in relationships, and you don't even realize while it's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the human experience. That is the beauty of relationships, is that give and take, you know?
Yeah.
And again, good, healthy relationships breathe like that. And it's not a dominance struggle. It's just a, you know, I know, you know, I love my wife. We have an amazing relationship, but I know when to breathe, and I know when to clench my fist, you know. Yeah. there's times for both. And you know, some when I'm, and don't think that I mean I'm hitting my
wife. It's like, oh boy, someone's gonna take that the wrong way.
No. My wife is a tough woman.
We're clipping for the next show.
Like, she might start giving me the business. I'm like, all right, here we go. Here we go.
Catch a check hook.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. It's funny, man. It's just, you know, when we bring these things up, and it sounds so easy, like talking about it, and to people that don't think like we do, they might think that we're just bitching about society or just bitching about the way things are. But I always just wonder if, like, what could be better than what we're doing right now? You know, I feel like maybe, like I said, maybe some bad things have to happen. Maybe some suffering has to happen in order for us to feel like this. I don't know. Because I feel like my life's great, but I've also experienced hard times, right? Not to the extent of some other people. I'm not going to sit here and lie and say that I've had the hardest life, because it's been far from hard, But relatively, I've had some hard times, right? So
everybody struggles, right, Rye?
That's what it seems like. You have to. Yeah. Like the people that never struggle, they're these people that are just on like Ritalin or Adderall, just constantly just kind of floating through life. And they're just like, yeah, everything's whatever, yeah. You know, and they don't really feel true human emotions, man. Like, I feel like you have to get upset and you have to like, you know, you have to see some horrible things and whatever to appreciate the great things.
I think that's the essence of creativity. You know, I mean, if everybody was just neutral and comfortable or stagnant or whatever, there wouldn't be any creativity. It's that, you know, you might be driving home and you get a flat tire, or your car craps out and you have to walk 3 miles home in the rain. Well, you know, you're going to have some creative thoughts during that time, you know, and you might have a flash of genius during that time, what you would not have had if you just comfortably drove home without any struggle. It's like out of struggle, out of inconvenience, out of pain, that's creativity. That's where, you know, I mean, I think the essence of creativity is not being stagnant.
Well, we just came full circle with that, right? We started out with that, with the whole idea of being creative, right? And everybody needs a creative outlet in some sort. And man, it's more true than ever today. So
yeah, dude.
I don't know.
Creativity comes from the worst shit and the best shit. It doesn't really come from the middle, that middle ground, right?
Well, there's no inspiration in middle.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like, well, you can be on an island, you know, chilling, not Epstein Island, but like a good experience, a good island, sipping some margaritas or whatever people drink on islands. I don't know. I've never been to an island, but like you could be on a yacht, you could be doing some crazy shit. And you can get some inspiration from that, or you could be, like you said, walking home in the rain when you weren't expecting to, and all these things. And like those, the inspiration comes from those spots. It's pretty
interesting. There's no external motivation to change or adapt anything when you're content in the middle.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
I don't know that any good songs have ever been written on a cruise ship.
No.
As you're dipping your vanilla wafer into the chocolate fountain, I don't think that's really when you're getting inspiration.
No, there's not much inspiration there. But well, guys, I hate to do it because we could go on for another couple hours, but we got to call it quits here. Let's go around and tell everybody where they can find you. And John, I'd love to have you back on, my friend. This is a fun conversation, and definitely would love to have you join us again sometime.
Oh man, it's a special thanks to Ryan for pulling me in. You know, this is such a great. I love this kind of stuff, and you guys are a blessing. Just having these kind of conversations. This is important stuff. And if one other person hears this conversation tonight, and just if it pushes them in a creative direction, then yay for us. We, you know, mission accomplished.
Exactly. Yeah. And where can they find your book, John?
The book, Red Pill Revolution, theredpillrevolution.com. You can head there and try to make that site a repository for news stories that need to stick around and not get memory holed. And so, you know, there's I hope a wealth of interesting news stories there. There's a lot of exclusive content that there's five authors on that book, and the five of us all make content, and it's all along these same lines. It's all around, you know, it's just individual people leading creative lives, trying to be not to sound too new agey or woo woo, but just trying to be light, you know, just want to be positive and want to, you know, we're all trying to learn our way forward, and I can learn so much from the three of you, and we can all learn from each other. And the only way we do that is to get into shit like this and have conversations and have these kind of talks. And so, yeah, theredpillrevolution.com. And we're there and always making shit, and there's always new stuff coming out.
Excellent, John. Yeah. Well, thank you very much, sir. We'll definitely be talking again. This was great. Drew, where can they find you, my friend?
Drew Missen, Your Missing the Point podcast, MISSEN, and Conspiracy Theater 3000 with my co-host Ryan and Moral Bob. So catch us on some breakdown, some fun movies, and see what's really hidden underneath all the messaging inside the entertainment industry.
And you guys are going to break down Shane Gillis next month, right?
Yeah, I'm watching it tonight, right after this.
Gotta watch it, dude. You'll love it. I keep telling you, I'm going to tell you every time. Until you watch it, I'm going to tell you to watch it.
That's great. Well, thanks, Drew, man. I appreciate it as always. Are you around next week?
I think I've got one of my own episodes to record next week, but I'll see how I go.
Perfect. Excellent. Well, thanks for hopping in when you can, man. I really appreciate it. Rye, what do you got going on?
Same old stuff, man. Just, John, thanks for hopping on, dude. I know, like, I'm real bad about getting back to people and stuff, but I'm glad I had it marked down on my calendar, the 15th. So I reached out. And yeah, I've only gotten the chance to talk with John twice, and both times it's been just really fun. Like you said, John, like, you're supposed to learn something when you speak with people. And that's happened both times that I've talked with you, man. Really, really fun conversations from, like, legitimately. And, you know, I love talking with Drew. I talk with him, you know, just about every week. And Matt, we talk multiple times a week. So, I mean, it's always just, this is why I talk with you guys. You know what I mean? Like, it's supposed to be, like, I don't talk to that many people constantly. And you're supposed to fucking, like, enjoy the people that you talk with. So, yep. Yeah, man, it's I think that this was, like, a nice enlightening episode. It was cool. It was fun. We got all kinds of different things, all kinds of different topics. But as far as what I'm doing, man, there's not nothing, you know, crazy going on over here. Trying to just get back in the groove with the new year and record regularly. Talking with a CIA contractor on the 23rd. That's going to be interesting. And then other than that, I'm just trying to figure out what's going on, man. Just nice. Like all of us. So what about you, Matt?
Nothing, man. I'm really thankful for this conversation. Like you said, it was definitely a little lighthearted. It got a little deep, which I think a lot of people need right now is just to sit back and think a little bit and be able to talk to different people. I think this whole thing is about the art of conversation, right? And making conversation great again, if we want to steal the whole Trump thing. And it's being able to talk. And I think the only way that we really truly get out of this mess is being able to communicate. I mean, if we go back to the times of, you know, the story of Babel, how did they disconnect humanity? Broke languages, right? No more one language. We couldn't communicate with each other. And then everything went awry. So I think communication is key. I think having conversations like this with different people, whether like you said, whether you agree with them or not, but be able to have a conversation with someone, be able to talk, and at the end of it, walk away, shake hands, have respect for one another. That's what it's all about. So I appreciate this conversation. This was great. And we will have more. Everybody stay strong and question everything.